From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Tax incremental finance districts are a tool in the economic development belt of local municipalities, but they've also been a source of criticism in recent years, especially in the city of La Crosse, where TIF opponents have argued there are too many, and as a result, they're bad for the average property taxpayer. UW La Crosse and UW Extension recently did a study of the impact of TIF districts in the greater La Crosse area. Our guest is the study's lead author, UW La Crosse political science professor John Cavari. Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis first asked him for the definition of a TIF district.
The way a tax incremental finance district works, or a TIF works, is that a local community can use this financing tool to help support real estate development in their communities. So if there's a rundown property or if there's development that's that they want to occur, they'll use TIF as a way to help spur real estate development or property development there. And the way that TIF works is kind of the interesting part. Basically, what these communities will do is they'll freeze the property tax base. So they'll freeze property values. And all new development that is generated after the investment goes to pay off that investment. So it's new property taxes that are paying off that investment into the TIF.
The basic idea is the city can borrow money and make improvements, street improvements, water and sewer improvements, and the hope is to spur new development in the area.
That's absolutely right. The goal is to increase property values, to convert perhaps a blighted property into something that's productive for the community overall.
Do most TIFs actually work that way?
This is the fun part of TIF, is that there are two sides. And TIF can be an extremely beneficial economic development tool. It can raise property values dramatically. But on the other hand, it's a risky tool. And if property values don't increase, like we saw during the Great Recession, that can put a strain on local budgets too.
How so?
If a city is going to borrow to invest in any given real estate development, the city has to repay that debt. And if the property values aren't going up in that district, the city's got to find other ways to refinance that debt. And that could come from either cutting existing services, that could come from increasing taxes, it could mean borrowing from other revenue-generating sources like utilities within the municipality. So there are a variety of options to deal with it, but it could still put a strain on the local budget.
Your study is a much more broad view of what's going on in the greater La Crosse area. A lot of communities are using at least one of these.
What we wanted to do was put La Crosse's TIF use in perspective with other communities. So we didn't just want to look at the city of La Crosse. We wanted to look at TIF in the greater La Crosse region. So we looked at a few other counties and a few comparable cities, cities that are similar in size to La Crosse. So, yeah, to start out, the city of La Crosse has increased its TIF use over the past, say, 10 to 20 years. So its TIF utilization rate, which is a measure that we like to use and look at how much TIF is actually being utilized in a community, that TIF rate has increased from TIF utilization rate of 5% in 2000 to just over 8% in 2012. So that TIF now covers a vast majority of downtown La Crosse. Comparably with other cities like Sheboygan or Oshkosh or Wausau, La Crosse is kind of in that range. So it's not, there's three levels. There's a low range, medium range, and a high range. I think La Crosse's TIF utilization rate is right between that medium and high range.
Is there a cap that municipalities, they can't exceed a certain percentage of their property value as a TIF?
That's right. So the state puts a limit on how much property value can actually exist in TIF districts, and that cap is 12%. So 12% of the community, if the TIF amount exceeds 12%, that community can no longer pursue TIF. So it's not a lot of communities actually exceed that 12% cap. What that cap means is that those communities can't pursue TIF anymore.
Could you describe a TIF that has gone well or worked well?
Sure. So there's a really a good example in downtown La Crosse, the Pump House, which is that art gallery downtown. And there's a TIF district there that has really generated some fantastic returns, increased property value. So in 1992, TIF number 5 along Front and King Streets was valued at about $890,000 in 1992. Now, in 2012, that same district is valued at over $8.5 million. So that return is pretty dramatic. To increase that, the property values there is pretty it's fantastic. So, and it really helps out other homeowners in the city.
That has been where the expansion of the large office buildings has been for Logistics Health and other companies down there.
That's correct. And I think it might encompass the Marriott as well.
Right.
Yeah.
And what did the city have to invest to get that return?
Ooh, gosh, I don't know. You know, my co-authors, Ryan Hutter and Carl Green from the UW Extension offices, have a really good grasp of those, the details of these individual TIFs. They would be helpful here.
The other side of the coin, describe a TIF that hasn't worked real well, either in the city of La Crosse or elsewhere that you came up with in the study.
Well, I think a really good example is the village of Warrens. So Warrens is where the Jellystone campground is, and this was a massive investment by the village of Warrens, and it initially it paid off very well. The property value decreased from a high of $90 million in 2008 to that value was cut in half to $45 million in 2012, so it was really affected by the Great Recession. So the economic turmoil that we went through, the overall decrease in housing values across the country really hit Warrens hard. And, they're hoping that that new property value would help pay off the initial investment into Jellystone. So that's lagging a little bit, but I think they'll rebound a little bit there.
Statewide, what is the use of TIFs like? Are communities using TIFs?
TIF is now the most widely used economic development tool by local governments. It's growing dramatically. It's grown about 40% over the past 10, 12 years, since about 2000. So it's expanding in its use, and the state is allowing for more and more opportunities for communities to utilize TIF, including towns. Towns were previously not allowed to use TIF, but they are allowing that for towns now.
Is there a reason we've seen this expansion in TIF use?
Well, I think there are a lot of success stories. You know, there again, the two sides of TIF. Property values have been going up during the 1990s and the 2000s, and it's been successful. It hasn't put a lot of strain on local budgets at all. And I think a lot of communities are seeing success stories, how these run-down, blighted properties can turn into something that's beneficial and adding to the tax base.
Is it used primarily for that, for the blighted property, or are suburbs that have a lot of land and can grow that way using TIFs as well?
And they can, and that's one of the concerns that we've highlighted in our report, is that TIF is now being used in a way that wasn't originally intended. So it's gone from being an economic redevelopment tool to being an economic development tool. So just for straight economic development, developing on otherwise natural green space or agricultural land and converting that into neighborhood developments.
Is there a concern with that?
Well, the concern is that if communities are going to use TIF for these expansive developments, these brand new developments on green space, that they won't have the economic benefits and spillover effects that these other TIF districts would that are kind of closely surrounded by other properties. We want TIF to have benefits that spill over to the surrounding area. And if a TIF district is isolated, say, on some open green space at the end of a highway, they might not have the spillover effects that TIF was intended. And TIF really should be used to redevelop these problematic properties. We don't want to skew the market so that we're just creating even cheaper land for real estate developers necessarily. But the purpose of TIF is really, the original purpose of TIF is really to redevelop these blighted properties.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We're talking with UW La Crosse political science professor John Kavari. He helped author a report that analyzes tax incremental financing in the greater La Crosse area. I know the TIF law in Wisconsin was created in the mid-70s.
Right.
And we've seen an expansion of it in the last 20 years.
Right.
Can we tie anything to that? I know local budgets have not been getting as much support from the state government in the last 20 years. Is there a direct correlation there?
Part of the concern with the Wisconsin statute is this definition of what a blighted property actually is, or a blighted series of properties actually is. It's fairly ambiguous. A blighted property could be just about anything that a local community wants it to be blighted. So the definition of blighted is stretched in Wisconsin in comparison to Minnesota. In Minnesota, the law is very specific, meaning that a blighted property has to be at least 50% developed or have structural deficiencies on that property. So I think we could learn a little bit from the Minnesota law in applying TIF here in Wisconsin.
So there have been changes recently to Wisconsin's law. What have they involved?
There are two specific changes to the TIF statute. One is to extend the life duration of a TIF district. I think if these districts are stressed, they can expand the life out to, I think, a maximum of 33 years or so. Another is to be able to create what's known as a mixed-use tax incremental finance district that eliminates that blight requirement in the statute if there's a mixed-use development, so a mix of industrial, commercial, and residential development. So it's a more complex version of the original TIF, and it's been used in Wisconsin with greater frequency.
There was also, within the last year or year plus, in the city of La Crosse, this notion of the reverse TIF
right.
came up in relation to a property that QuickTrip was trying to develop. What is a reverse TIF?
Well, a reverse TIF can go by a lot of different names, but the way I like to refer to a reverse TIF is that a developer, instead of the city incurring the debt, and I'm not sure if this applies to the QuickTrip development or not, but the way we like to refer to a reverse TIF is that instead of a city taking on that initial debt, a developer will actually take on that initial debt. And the new property taxes will go to pay off the debt that the developer incurs. So it's a way to limit the liability that a city uses.
Are there positives and negatives to that?
Because TIF has risk inherently involved, whenever a city is going to or a village is going to incur debt, you want to minimize the liability. You want to allow for the repayment of that investment. So to put the burden on the real estate developer instead of the municipality, I think, is, you know, a creative use of TIF. And in the report, we want to encourage the creative use of TIF.
You mentioned Minnesota's law and how it's a little different. Do most states have a tax incremental financing law or something similar?
Yeah, and, you know, all the states are different. Now, I think 49 states now allow for TIF, and I forget who the exception is, but it's very widely used now, and each state is going to be a little different. The Wisconsin statute has two really important requirements for a basic TIF. The TIF needs to be applied to blighted properties, and the TIF needs to occur, or the real estate investment needs to occur but for the TIF, or could not happen but for the TIF, meaning the but for, you know, test is an interesting test. It's a little bit of a logical, you know, puzzle. Basically, what it means is that the TIF can't happen unless the real estate development wouldn't happen but for the TIF. So the real estate wouldn't happen unless there's TIF support there. But that can be stretched too. You know, it's a little bit of a word salad there, but those are the two main requirements, the blight designation and the but-for test.
One of the most common criticisms or complaints of TIFs that I've heard over the years is that if you have a lot of them, like the city of La Crosse does, if they aren't producing the tax revenue or the tax base that they're projected to create, that the average homeowner is going to suffer as a result of that. Is that a valid argument?
You know, I think there is some concern that, you know, some communities could be using TIF too much or over-TIFing. And I think there's some valid concern there. We want to make sure that our elected officials are using these financial strategies in a prudent way, in a way that's not going to hurt property taxpayers or residents. Now, the thing with TIF is that, you know, if a TIF isn't performing the way it should be, there are a lot of strategies that public officials can use to minimize the risk or the impact on the average resident in the community or the average property taxpayer. So, you know, these elected officials, if a TIF isn't working well, can, you know, perhaps cut services, restructure the debt. They could, you know, hopefully not increase taxes, or they could borrow from utilities, other revenue-generating sources, to help pay that TIF off. Now they can extend the life of the TIF as well. So there are a lot of tools to help minimize that risk. The other concern is that, you know, using TIF is somehow hurting other taxing entities like the school district or the county government or TC, Western Technical College District. I'm not sure if that criticism necessarily holds, because the TIF is there to help out those taxing entities down the road as well.
If I recall, they also have a say. The school district does, the Western Technical College does, the county has a say on whether a TIF district can happen or not, doesn't it?
Right. There's an extra process. The city of La Crosse, for example, can't just snap their fingers and say, we want to use TIF. Every TIF proposal has to go through what's known as a joint review board process, so that all the other taxing entities that would be affected by a TIF have a say. So La Crosse County would have a say, La Crosse School District would have a say, and TC would also have a say in that. Mm. So they've got to give the thumbs up in order for this TIF to actually occur.
Could a successful TIF help pay for other not as successful TIFs that aren't making their return on investment?
Yeah, so there's a new caveat in the TIF law that says that a successful TIF, revenue from a successful TIF, if property values are growing in that front in King Street area, that revenue can be used to help pay off a TIF that's not doing as well. And that's happening here in La Crosse. It's not to any great extent where it's worrisome. But you know, it could be a smart strategy. I think the Village of Holman is considering using the strategy now. The village administrator there is looking at ways to help one of its struggling TIFs out. So I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that's wise, you know, fiscal management.
Why do this report?
From an academic standpoint, you know, from my standpoint, it's really interesting to study because it is so widely used now. And I teach a class at UWL, Urban Administration, and I teach budgeting classes where we can analyze this TIF mechanism. And future public leaders, future public administrators are going to be using TIF. And I think it's important for them to know what's working and what's not, the advantages and disadvantages of this important tool.
Would it be wise to do a report for the whole state?
Yeah, I think so. And there are a couple of different reports that are out there. I think in Madison, the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, or COWS, has done a report. I did a report back in 2009 with the Public Policy Forum that analyzes TIF statewide. And I think it's important to keep an eye on this so that it's not being overused, that we're not putting our communities at risk. I'd love to expand the scope of the report to a statewide audience, yeah.
And apart from students in a class who are going to be tomorrow's leaders, how can current communities use this in the future?
That's one of the things that we wanted to highlight in the report, not only the trends of TIF use in the region, but also strategies that elected officials can use to make TIF more successful. So the first thing I think that we thought of was that county governments can provide a lot of technical, financial, and planning assistance to local communities that are looking at TIF, just to put a little more scrutiny on these TIF proposals, thinking about worst-case scenarios. I think what a lot of the plans do is consider best-case scenarios. And I think that elected officials can make better choices with respect to TIF if they know the full story. Another thing is to look at TIF from a regional perspective. I know that communities are competing with one another for jobs and economic growth in their communities, but I think we need to think about TIF a little more regionally. We need to make sure that we're not just poaching jobs from another community by using TIF. We're not using TIF to compete with one another, but rather we're looking at real job creation. And I think the last thing is to look at creative alternatives like reverse TIFs to minimize the risk that these local communities are taking upon themselves. So using all of those strategies, I think we might use TIF in a better way, and one that has more efficient returns.
John Kovari is a political science professor at UW-La Crosse. Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis talked with him about a recent report UW-La Crosse and UW Extension produced that looks at regional tax incremental finance district use in the greater La Crosse area. Kovari is the lead author of that report. A copy of the report is available on our website, WPR.org/newsmakers. And next time on Newsmakers, we'll preview a conference in La Crosse next month that deals with the issue of human trafficking. The conference is sponsored by the La Crosse YWCA. We'll also talk with an expert on human trafficking from a California-based agency that works to stop incidents of human trafficking around the world. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Stroob, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at WPR.org/newsmakers. You'll also find extended interviews and photos. And if you'd like to comment on our program or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.